Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to week four of Deliberate Practice on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I'm joined by my guest host, Andy Ryland. And today we're going to talk about the concept of compete. Andy, always great to have you here.
Coach, always a pleasure to be here. Really enjoy the series up to this point. Compete, great topic, a word all coaches love. So let's dig into it a little bit.
Yeah, you know, we've kind of focused through the first 3 weeks here on things that we're building incrementally. And as your players become confident, like we talked about last week, you want to put them in a situation where they have to compete, where their ability to play fast comes out, where their aggressiveness in making decisions or confidence in making decisions come out, and then also add some of those variations to things. Put it in chaotic environments. So our focus today from both sides of the ball, on offense and defense, is going to be the scramble drill. And from my experiences, this was something that was very hard to replicate. In my initial teaching of it, going back probably 15 years or so, what I would do is we'd go through, I'd put the quarterback in a scramble, and then the receivers would start to run their routes as we taught them. And I think in terms of teaching scramble rules, that is very useful. But in terms of trying to put in something that is more game-like, you have to look at this in a different way. And so I really dug into this idea and tried to figure out some ways I could make it more competitive, I could make it more game-like, I could allow routes and timing to essentially fall apart and then allow players to react to it. So we're going to talk about a couple variations from the offensive side of the ball. And the first is in essentially what is a 7-on-7 setting, 100% prescribed to working the scramble. And this is something we would do when I was at Baldwin Wallace University, a period we added, actually, we called it compete every day right at the beginning of practice. After we warmed up, everybody would come together, and sometimes that was a good-on-good period for, let's say, five plays. Sometimes it was maybe a circuit where we felt we need to get better at some fundamentals, and then sometimes it was something like this where we would be working on the scramble. So setup of the drill. You're going to start with your normal 7-on-7. And in this variation, I'm going to control the quarterback. I'll go up to where the guy is snapping the ball. Sometimes I would just snap the ball to him. But I would give him directions, and I would give him his gap escape. So we worked our gap escapes essentially in what we would call A-gap, B-gap, C-gap, or D-gap escapes. And I'll define those here quickly. An A-gap escape is essentially a movement either up, back, or preferably side to side. That really is more the A-gap. I don't like when the quarterback has to start to climb the pocket unless he's starting to get out through a B-gap escape. So a lot of times I would just work right and left with this as a B-gap escape. And essentially he's stepping one gap over to avoid a rusher and get out of his way and be able to keep his base wide and throw the football quickly. So the A-gap, I might do something like this. I would give him three usually. I would go A, and then D. So he would go A-gap, and I would point a direction. He wouldn't know which way it was coming. He'd have to react to my cue and then execute both of those on command and then get out of the gap. And once he got to his third one, by that time, timing had broken down, routes had broken down, and now the scramble drill is on, and our receivers are applying their scramble rules. Scramble rules in general, I'll get to in a second. B-gap escape is essentially our natural escape from the pocket with the way our protection work. We would go man on a defensive end and we would slide everything else. Back would insert and check from B on out, looking for an extra rusher from level 2 or level 3. A B-gap escape, the main thing we would want him to do as he's getting into the B-gap was maintain his status as a thrower. We wanted his vision down the field. We wanted that ball carried in a place where it was protected, yet he was able to get it out quickly. So he wasn't immediately going to a tuck. He was approaching the line as if he was going to throw the ball. C-gap escape works off of the B-gap. So if he was going to start his B-gap escape, essentially that gap would close and he'd have to get back around that to the C-gap or potentially roll out to the other side, you know, spin over the top of it. And then the last one is the D-gap escape. And we thought of this one primarily as you are being hunted down. You have somebody on your heels. You're going to have to essentially run laterally or parallel with the line of scrimmage and get the ball down the field. Use your extension to the receiver on the throw as your way of finding accuracy. It wasn't something where he could stop, check his feet, and throw, because if he did, he would get ear holes. So those were the components for the quarterback. I mentioned the scramble rules, and in general, what we would do there is if you were short, you would go deep. If you were deep, you would come back. If you were crossing the field towards the quarterback, you would continue. If you were crossing the field away, you would plant and come back across the other way. And this provided him multiple options on different levels down the field and allow him to start to get a feel for where those guys were going to be. So the setup of the draw, as I mentioned before, would be three commands. And a simple form of that could be AAD. So I would say AAD to him. He would snap the ball. We would have a full route progression called. So he had a play in, but he would know he wasn't going to get to it. So on the snap, he'd take his drop, look at his initial throw. I would say A gap and point a direction. I would say A and either point the same way. I could point the opposite way. And then D, and he would go on the clap. I'd clap, initial way for him to get out, and I'd leave some choice in that matter. Sometimes he would go two, sometimes he was away. Some quarterbacks I would control the direction as well. And he would be on the move, throwing the football, not being able to set up. Now, there's no rush. It's imaginary. But now the coverage has broken down, and it really puts stress on that defense as well. So, you know, where that initial scramble drill, there's nothing there. Guys are working their routes. This starts to have more of a game feel. And certainly you can add different components to this. I might want him to throw his rhythm route. So I would tell him rhythm A, B as an example. And on the rhythm route, he's essentially making a decision, a go or no go. And if he doesn't throw, I'm giving him the command then for the A gap. Or I'm sorry, it was B gap. And if he didn't throw, I'm giving him the command for the A gap and then the B gap escape and pointing him to a direction I want him to go. And again, the idea is that he isn't going to cross that line until absolutely necessary, when he can't see something or he sees space down the field in which he can run. So in this way, just in a normal 7-on-7 period, we start to create a realistic scramble drill. Before I go into some components we can add, I'm going to let Andy talk about the defensive side and some considerations for the defense when approaching a drill like this.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. I think you mentioned a couple really key points. And the one I want to focus on first is the idea that you give the quarterback the initial read. A lot of times when you see players on the defensive side working on scramble drill, it's in a scramble drill period. But what happens is the wide receivers don't run their initial routes hard, and the coverage is a little bit lax because they know everyone's waiting for the scramble. I tend to think that the challenge in scramble drill is when we convert our coverage into our scramble coverage rules. We'll say we're going to use a plaster technique. We're going to take the man in our zone, and we're going to own him from there on out. The challenge isn't normally the man principles. The challenge is being able to make the flexible decision in real time. I'm communicating, I'm passing in zones, and then I have to transition into our new coverage. So without allowing that initial read to be live, doesn't give you the initial feel, and I don't think the players get a realistic view of it. Now, they may learn the rules, but again, the challenge on game day is going to be those transitions. So when we talk about our coverage on scramble drill, a couple things to think about. The first is going to be, you know, what's going to be our coverage adjustment? Are we going to plaster? Are we going to go to man, right? With a younger team, and I know we have, you know, junior high coaches or youth coaches who may even listen, are you guys going to try to stay in your zone and re-communicate it? So what are going to be the rules? How are we going to communicate? And then what leverages are we going to assign? So whether we're going in man, what's going to be the type of man we play? Are we going to turn and face guard underneath? Are we giving them no quarterback responsibilities? Are we trying to have them see both? There's all sorts of things to take into consideration. I don't think either one is right or wrong. I think the one you are most comfortable with and the one that you can teach the best is going to work the best. Now, we know short receiver go deep, the deep receiver come back, and crossers are going to be worked into most scramble drills. So what is our backside going to do? Are we going to keep one guy back for throwback or for a leaker? Are we going to try to compress it? Looking at our rules that we might use on a rollout. The second thing that I would think about is, what is going to be my secondary contain plan? Most of us have a secondary contain plan for boot, right, or for rollout. Now, what's going to be our plan for scramble? Are we going to send a secondary contain man up to try to keep the quarterback from running, especially if we know who we're playing this week likes to try to gain yards with their leg? Now, if we're going to use plaster technique, which is the one that I've most often used and I like best, it really interesting to think about is, unlike a zone coverage versus a bootleg, where you're normally pre-assigning who secondary contain is, you don't know where the deployment of the wide receivers will be when the rush breaks down and the quarterback breaks the pocket. So if we're going to turn and take the man in our zone, we as a defense are unaware of who's going to be our initial secondary contain rusher, which brings us to the last point, which is communication. I've found it interesting that often 7-on-7 periods are incredibly loud with great talk from the defense. But on pursuit periods, you never hear the defense talking, which is an interesting situation, right? Why don't our guys talk to each other in pursuit about, hey, I'm here, hey, I'm with you. You can't see me because maybe I'm two steps behind, but I'm in line with you. We're forming a net where we're going to be able to vice this thing into the sideline, right? So that communication isn't there. Well, think about the scramble drill. I'm communicating in my zone coverage, you know, crosser, crosser, shallow, shallow. All of a sudden we break down. We get a plaster call from the safety. I man up the player who's in my zone, but now who becomes free? It could be any one of our underneath defenders who's now free. And they're going to have to clearly communicate in real time that they are leaving, that they are gone. So our players can use a simple me you call for who's going to go. You could use a me you call for the coverage, i.e. mine, if I have this player. So developing a communication plan is incredibly important, and you're spot on. You can't get the real-time action of switching from zone-to-man principles within timing of a quarterback scramble unless you do it in some sort of competitive situation. The predetermined scramble drill, I think, just loses the transition aspect that is what actually makes it difficult on our receivers. So make sure you call a variety of defensive zone coverages, even sprinkle in your man coverages. Make sure you work the transition. How are you going to communicate the transition? How are you going to own the transition? And then how are we going to communicate who's manned up and whether or not we're going to use the free players as robbers or secondary contain or a mixture of both? And this can only be done within the periods you're talking about, where we have a live read, so I can get burned early if I don't do the right thing, and I'm dynamically trying to talk, communicate, and make decisions.
I think those are some great coaching points, Andy, and really, you don't get some of that teaching, you don't get the ability to teach, unless you put your players into these competitive situations. Like you said before, walking through a scramble drill is a heck of a lot different than putting them in a live situation. And unfortunately, when we look at practice, the majority of the time, our scout team is not going to put us in those situations as much, because the quarterback, number one, isn't allowed to be touched, so he feels a heck of a lot more confident in standing in the pocket and throwing. And then that's not good for the defense as well if they're not put into those situations. And a lot of times the defense is going to get to the quarterback more often than not on the scout team. But now you start to put this in there and you allow them to compete, even though the line isn't in. I think you have a great teaching situation. And I would recommend trying to get these, especially early on, get these on film so you can start to give them those coaching points. And the idea is that they're able to carry this competition into Friday night, into game day, and be able to be proficient in what they're doing. Have the understanding because they've done it before in essentially what is a live situation. Now, we can add some parameters to this as well by putting in the line. But I think there has to be some prescription to how you handle the line. Otherwise, again, you're going to end up in a situation maybe where you're getting the ball off all the time, or you're telling guys to lose blocks, and you don't want to do that. That's developing bad habits. So the way I would do it is this. Essentially, if there was something that happened naturally, the quarterback's going to react and escape from it. But I would probably handle it in this way. Get guys to their first two steps in a fit, both sides of the ball, in where they're supposed to be. And then once the quarterback has been given his command to move on his final movement, and in this one I would vary it between 1, 2, and 3 movements instead of just 3, now he has, the defense will have the opportunity to react. And I might let them go on, you know, the clap. So when they hear the coach clap, then react and go there. And when you think about this, this isn't something we necessarily work and drill. So we have to think from a defensive perspective, especially like a defensive end, how do I keep my contain rush when this guy is intending to get to the outside? How do I pursue? What's my angle to him as he's heading away from me, or as he's heading to the side I'm on? From an offensive perspective, I think it really becomes, what do I do to maintain my effort in this play and help the play out? So all of a sudden, I'm blocking. I have my guy right there where I'm supposed to, and he takes off outside of me in a different direction. And now I have to recover and potentially get to a point where I can make a block or run him past the quarterback, so the quarterback either has the ability to get downfield or has the ability to set up and throw. So I think there's a lot there that those guys can react to. I think you have to school them up, though, initially. Like, this is a point, because guys are turning and running. There's different directions. Do not take a shot that the player can't see. Don't ear hole somebody just because you have the opportunity. And, you know, we've seen these before. A lot of those do happen in live game scrambles.
Yeah, I think we first off, we have to teach our guys to be good teammates to each other, right? And I think, you know, coaches are doing that. And within competitive periods, right, I think it's important to communicate that we're going to compete with speed, and we're going to compete with decision-making and pressure. But that doesn't always have to mean full collision, especially on some of those, you know, zigzag scramble cutback drills where the guys get opened up. I think there's two really important points about reaction for the offensive and defensive line. You know, as we talk about the defensive lineman's rush, you know, if we knew it was going to be rollout or something, our contain is going to be much easier. Similar to the back seven, the challenge is often getting off the ball as hard as you can with a specific aim point, because, you know, you've scouted where the quarterback's launch point is, and then having to adjust that rush as the quarterback steps up and bails. So that transition is what makes his job easy, and he needs reps and feel at that. The other thing for the offensive lineman that you mentioned is that because we don't know where the initial pressure is going to come from, you know, let's say I'm a right offensive tackle, and I get back, I'm in good phase with the defensive end, the block looks pretty, but if there's pressure up the middle and the quarterback all of a sudden bails, now my defensive lineman appears to be releasing pressure and working away from me. Well, how do I feel that? How do I read that? How do I know that all of a sudden he's not trying to pressure the pocket anymore? He's releasing all the pressure because my quarterback just hit the eject button, and now I have to go back and find work. You know, my initial thought is, okay, I'm just going to widen him and let him get wide and let him get past the quarterback. So if I don't feel the quarterback moving, I don't know that I need to move when that defensive end releases pressure to take that new angle. And that feel is a really important aspect of the VDA. Although VDA stands for vision decision, because that's most common on the line play, that physical stimulus of pressure and releasing pressure and which way your opponent is heading or trying to force you is a really valuable skill that those guys need to learn and feel to be able to adapt in real time. And so I think it's something we need to do. And the other thing that I would say is you need to make sure you practice it with stunts on, so that our interior guys are getting practice, making sure that they're now working contain on the scramble, or that our defensive ends are now stuck down in and they're fighting through to get back out and try to climb back through. Plus, that also changes our offensive line's initial read so that now they're being challenged initially, similar to the quarterback having the first read hot. If the offensive linemen are just playing to the scramble drill, then their life becomes really easy. If they're passing off a twist and then having to react down the line to scramble drill in a moving pocket and trying to find work, it becomes much more difficult. So they definitely play a key role, and there's creative ways you can get them involved. But my first point, have them compete with speed and technique, but obviously be a good teammate. That doesn't need to be full collision, especially on the windback or the crackback block.
Yeah, really, I would look to essentially get a fit there and pull up and let it go if you have to. It's about getting to the position you're supposed to be in. Just like when we work a thud period or a period where the defense is just going to tag off and essentially fit and run through where they're supposed to be. That would be the same kind of concept here. I think, you know, you bring up the twist. This is a good opportunity for us to work some of those things we might not get in the normal course of team periods in practice. How often does a play break down? Again, looking at a defense maybe going against scout team where you run that twist and you can just keep going full tilt. And this is going to be a situation, then you run that twist and now the quarterback's moving. And that guy who's coming around to C-gap position has to maintain his gap control and not get out leveraged. So now he has a little bit of a different approach rather than that, you know, blind rush upfield. He's got to be aware of the things that are happening and react to those around him. So I think there's a lot of benefits for finding some time. For us, it was a 5-minute period each week. It doesn't have to be a lot, but it's a great competition period and guys are really moving. Done right, you're going to have to take a quick break and get some water and then move on to your next drill.
No, 100%. And I think the point we've said multiple times is that the good on good aspect of this, which, you know, keeps us within our contact limits for high school coaches by using a small dose, if your state counts thud as full contact, but allows us to get the work that most often our scout teams don't deliver, especially at our smaller schools where the discrepancy may be bigger between our first team and our second team, just based on pure numbers. So giving those dynamic game looks at speed. And I really like what you said about doing it early in practice, because I know I found that those early practice competition periods can really add some great energy, get the guys going, and oftentimes that will carry you through the rest of practice when programmed at the effective dose, like you talked about, 5-minute ones versus ones, twos versus twos, you get some quality reps in, you're installing rules for specific situations that will probably come up on game day, but you may not want to dedicate a huge amount of time to, and your guys are going to get some real good stimulus and get themselves ready to go sharpen that sword.
And I do think, as you mentioned, the levels of contact and what you're allowed to do is, you know, going back to that, you can do something that's a little bit more prescribed, like I said, take two steps for the offensive line, take two steps for the defensive line, get in your rush lane and fit and stop, don't have contact, and then react to the scramble. So play around with it. There's different ways you can use it. I think the point is, though, adding that real live game stimulus, which is important, and the competition phase of this too. We want our guys to have fun, compete, and this was always a great period for us, beginning a practice after warm up to get the juices flowing and get into it. And, you know, when we look at the special teams aspect, Andy, I think this is a great opportunity to find ways for our kickers to compete. And a lot of times, again, I go back to the traditional setup of special teams a lot, but, you know, what guys have learned is you throw your one unit out there and maybe you go back and forth between two kickers. Maybe you're, you know, as you get into it, your one kicker is only getting work. And it's something that really doesn't give us an insurance plan and cover us if something happens to that number one kicker. So the idea with this is to use a half line, real rush, half line, and to get more reps out of it for that kicker. The idea, and we used to call this the kicking wheel, we could do it with two full teams at the college level, but we would have one team going on one hash, the other going on the opposite hash, and get a full rush against them as we would start moving them back and then switch kickers across the hash. Well, again, high school level, you might not have the setup for complete two full teams, But now you can work your skill guys in this equation, your long snapper, your holder, and your kicker, both ones and twos, in a very competitive situation. And a lot of times that younger kicker is your JV kicker. He's somebody who it's not his time on Friday nights yet, but now we start to give him more real game reps, real feel, game-like reps, and he can get better in those situations.
No, and oftentimes the standard way of trying to put pressure on a kicker is betting sprints or practices over, or, you know, we get a free night when it comes down to the preseason camp, but nothing is going to, you know, really influence him like a full rush. And the half line drill is great because we really get to compete. We really get to get a full rush, but we also can take some precautions, we'll say, within the rush by only going half line. We don't have to worry about guys coming from the other side. We don't have to worry about an accidental collision. We can focus with smaller numbers, which allows the coaches to control and see a little bit more, but get full pressure and really put something on the line with these guys, you know, like we like to do, where you make the little fun bets between offense and defense, or what each blocked kick or each missed field goal is worth in terms of, you know, something as simple as one push-up, or, you know, we used to bet songs. The losing team would have to sing a song, just a little something to add some spice to it.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, again, I like the pressure situations. I like creating those situations where there is something on the line, but also competing for sprints is a heck of a lot different than when there's a rush coming at you. And I do like the half line rush. You don't get those situations where guys cross paths and run into each other, or potentially run in or thrown into the kicker or the holder. And we want to protect our guys. And you can go back and forth between this is a live rep and, you know, this is to the fit, to be able to take some contact out of it. Or potentially you just go to the fit and send a rusher who might be unblocked off the edge to put that pressure on to maintain, you know, your levels of contact and the contact time that you have available according to your state rules.
No, that's a great point. And what you can do is you can work to the fit on the live side. And because the fit side is going to not be collapsing the pocket, you can send a couple rushers from the open side to be distractors. And so there's a whole bunch of ways to get multiple reps, challenge all sides, and make sure your kicker is kicking with traffic and noise in front of him. But the kind of noise and traffic that's going to be in the game, you know, you could have the coach blowing a whistle in his ear and you're betting your sprints on it. Or you can actually say, hey, we're going to put three guys on the open side. They're going to be allowed to come down the line. We tell them, you know, that they're not going to hit the ball, but that's some true eye manipulation. Or we can remove the guy from the open side and say, hey, rush side, you're live, let's go get one. And that's important work for the defense to get too. While you do have to watch your collision count, it is important work for them to get, you know, really good efforts on trying to split the gaps, trying to get that job done. Because there's going to be a time during the year where you need a block kick to either seal a victory or to win the game. And if it's only ever been practiced from the offensive side or versus inferior opponents, those guys might not be ready to really hit a gap and get it done in crunch time.
Andy, some great ideas as usual today. I really enjoyed talking about the scramble drill and the different variants we could add to that, as well as adding some special teams competition in here. Again, I think this is a time where we can find those periods throughout our practice to put a little competition in. Maybe it's good on good. Maybe it's these different situations like we mentioned. But I think the key is continuing to make your players better through those live game variations and the VDA cycle.
Yeah, the game specifics are what make the game so difficult. So for coaches, I'm sure you'll come up with your own great periods, but think about, you know, what makes certain things difficult. And for me, it's the transition of a predetermined launch point into a scramble is what's tough on the D lineman. And the transition from a zone coverage to a man coverage is what makes it difficult. So if we don't train that aspect at speed and at tempo, it's going to be a very difficult mental switch for them to make in the game. And that's why I think that these periods that are looking to create situations, but doing it in a competitive environment, give them the best opportunity to be ready for game day.
Andy, thanks again for taking the time today. Coaches out there, we can continue this conversation. Andy is at USA Football MT. I am at Coach K Grabowski, and our new footballdevelopment.com Twitter is at FBDEVCoach. We look forward to continuing some of these conversations, answering questions. We will be back next week with the focus being on focus. Also, be looking for our speakers at our national conference. We're releasing those right now. Those will be up on our website at usafootball.com. We have a great lineup coming to you in 2019, February 22nd through 24th in Orlando. It's a great chance to network with guys around the country. Last year, our high school speakers accumulated over 90 state championships together, so we have a great group of guys coming to you again this year. And like I said, we'll be releasing those speakers weekly, even daily, as we start to nail those down for you.
As always, coaches, appreciate your time. Good luck this week, and talk to you again next week.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.